Welcome to Leading the Next Generation with Tim Elmore. I'm your co-host, Andrew McPeak, and here at Growing Leaders, our mission is to empower the emerging generations with skills to lead in real life. And today we're talking about leadership.
Yeah.
Funnily enough.
Yes. Yes, we are.
I think you know a few things about
leadership. Well, I'm learning as I go. But I tell you what, Andrew, I was so helped by 20 solid years under Dr. John C. Maxwell. Right out of college, I started with him in my 20s and 30s and then my 40s. And it was so rich to have gleaned by watching a leader that was strong. But then also, I was just in an incubator of leadership. Everywhere I was, there was leaders showing me the way. So it's
Fun. We are all a product of both the leaders we've had in our lives, but also the experiences.
Yes. Yeah.
And I know we wanted to start off by talking about a few leadership experiences.
All right, you go first.
Well, both of us thought of camp stories, which I think is hilarious.
And that was our first real, or maybe not first, but one of the early
ones. One of the early ones, So for me, I remember back when I was a college student, I was a part of this group, and we would go around and do these conferences, and we'd do them at schools, you know, high schools and all these different kinds of things. But we got booked to come do this at a summer camp one time.
Yeah.
And so we went off and showed up at this summer camp, very rustic, you know, out in the woods and all those kinds of things. And typically what I would do as a part of this thing is I would, you know, help set things up. I would lead a small group of students. We'd talk about different subjects and all those kinds of things. Well, when I showed up, they had some additional leadership responsibilities in mind.
Okay.
And so within about 10 minutes of arriving at this camp, I was put in charge. I became camp counselor for about 20 middle school boys. And so all of a sudden, they throw me in this space and they say, hey, you're on the top bunk. And by the way, you know, he's got to take his medicine. And can you help this kid with this?
Yeah.
And by the way, these two are probably going to fight. And keep them from doing pranks on the girls tonight.
And
I didn't get any sleep.
No.
I was not prepared really for the next day. But it was one of those things that, like, oftentimes in leadership, you're thrown into a subject.
And ready or not.
A situation. Yeah. You just got to go with it.
Well, I had a ready or not situation too. One of my earliest leadership experiences was also at a summer camp. It was up in Oregon. I was asked to come and speak, and I thought, well, this would be cool, you know? So I was supposed to speak twice a day, and so I was all prepared to speak twice a day. Little did I know that would be the least of my responsibilities. Each day, they gave me more responsibilities. I don't know if staff failed to show up or they just were doing a bait and switch, be a speaker. But then also, by the second day, they had me raising the flag on the flagpole. In the morning, every day. So I had to get up before everybody else. And, you know, the song played, and I'm pulling the ropes and so forth.
As if you didn't have anything else to do.
That's right, So we had a team meeting every day, and that's when I learned about the flagpole. But then I learned about helping to serve breakfast. And then I learned about doing the cabin checks, you know, making sure everything's clean and nothing wrong is going on in there. So by Wednesday, I'm saying, excuse me, is there anything else you're going to ask me to do so I can just know when I need to prepare for the talks that I'm going to be doing?
Yeah, because I'm going to be staying up till 11 just to have time for that.
Yeah, so I worked in dining hall, raised the flag and flagpole, started the day, spoke twice. It was quite funny. But it was one of those ready or not. You just know, and when you're in your 20s, you could just go, I'll just do it, man. And you look back and go, what in the world was going on?
It's so funny. And we all begin our leadership journey differently, but that's just it. Is the one thing I think we all have in common is we all start somewhere.
Yeah, that's right.
And one of the things I think that's so helpful about a lot of the stuff that you do is that you know how to help students start well. And that's really what we're talking about.
Well, it is. And I think one of the reasons, if we do any good at all, and I hope we do, but it's because, I'll just speak for me, I don't think I'm a natural leader. I think I have a little charisma in it and may be attractive to people, but I think I had to learn leadership. I'm a situational leader.
Yeah.
Put me in a good situation and I can lead well. So I'll never forget in 1979, that's 40 years ago this year, my first paid leadership position happened and I was in charge of a team of people. Wasn't middle school boys, but it was a team of people. And I'm telling you, it was at that point when I realized I was leading colleagues, some of which were older than me.
Yeah.
And you know, when you're young like that, you're just saying, I better lead people younger because maybe I know one thing they don't know.
Yeah.
But I would say I was both passionate and intimidated.
Mm.
Because at the beginning, when you really don't know what you're doing.
That's what it looks like.
And this was before Google or Wikipedia. I couldn't look up anything.
Yeah.
I'm digging through books, how to confront a problem person, how to cast a vision for a great idea, how to lead a meeting. All those things were stuff I kind of learned along the way. And really, I was the personification, Andrew, of I was learning just in time, not just in case.
Absolutely.
I was doing it right after I read how to do it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, what's great is, you know, a natural leader might have said, hey, you know, just do it. It's not that hard, right? But because you had to work at it a little bit, I think one of the things that you've been able to do is to sort of condense down, what is it that I did in the end that helped me succeed in that scenario?
I sure hope so. I've often heard when it comes to baseball, let's say, that the natural hitter isn't always the best coach because he was so natural. He didn't know what to say. I just
doesn't know how to
just,
coach
just
somebody.
Swing the bat.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, I don't know if I'm a natural leader, but maybe I can remember what I did, remember what I'm doing, and communicate it and explain it to others.
Well, what we would all love, everybody listening I know would love to know, how do I teach these students how to swing that bat well?
Yeah.
And so we've got six effective leadership qualities that I think is going to help any young person as they're building those leadership skills.
Yeah, I hope so. So let's jump in.
Yeah, let's do it.
Number one of the six is a simple word, but we don't use it in everyday conversation. Positivity. Positivity. So what this means is you focus on the strengths of others, not the weaknesses. You see the weaknesses, but your focus is on the strengths. You see opportunities in each challenge. You maintain a vision for possibilities in every single problem. This is interesting. There was a study that was done by the Alternative Board, and according to respondents in this study, positivity is the most important leader trait that they can have, beating out being passionate or decisive or personable. All those are important. But isn't it interesting? When the people said, this is what I want most in a leader, they want somebody that's positive. Yeah. We all are attracted to optimism.
Yep.
We're repelled by negativism. In fact, can't we all think of somebody that when they walk our way in the hallway, we're trying to avoid them?
Yeah.
Why? Not because they're bad people. We just know this is going to be a downer. This is Debbie Downer.
I don't want to spend time with that person. Yeah. I definitely don't want to follow that person.
Yeah. So I think of a classic illustration. Dr. Martin Luther King, during the 1950s and 60s, became this very, very positive leader that the civil rights movement needed so much. Mm. There were other civil rights leaders, but so many were saying, I've got a complaint. Yeah. And they did.
Yeah.
Dr. King said, I have a dream.
Yeah.
And we're attracted to dreams. So when he stood on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial in 1963 and said, I have a dream, I get a little teary just thinking about this. You listen and you go, man, I want to sign up for that.
Yeah.
Whatever that is you're saying. But we're attracted to positivity. So I would say, listeners, if you check your personality and your tendencies and your the glass is half empty, I want you to look at where you're going.
Yeah.
By the way, the glass is half empty only if you're emptying it. It is half full if you're filling it. So let's make sure we're contributors, not detractors from the cause.
Good. And we're not suggesting that people step away from reality.
No.
Be very honest about the reality of the situation you're in. But having the right attitude of positivity is about painting a picture that includes hope. Right.
So here's what I learned from John Maxwell about this. John was an ultimate optimist. My gosh, everything was wonderful, you know, and we're going to change the world by noon on Friday.
Yeah.
Here's what I remembered. He did know there were problems, but he said, if you bring a problem to me to talk about, bring me a couple of solutions as well, at least ideas. That's what we try to do here. Let's make sure we're focusing on solutions, not just problems.
I love that. All right. So that was number one, positivity. Yep. Let's do number two.
Number two, a second needed attribute in leaders is long-term perspective. Long-term perspective. And I think I say it's the second most needed one because I think we're in a day of short-term thinking. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely.
Where we just think about next weekend or maybe this weekend. So I believe one of the differentiators that good leaders possess that mere followers don't necessarily is how they think. In fact, something I learned from Dr. Maxwell years and years and years ago is leaders see things bigger than followers do. They see things before their followers do, and they see beyond what followers do. I love those B words.
Yeah.
And I think all three are very legitimate thoughts, but it's the way we think. So you may not be the most persuasive person listening today. You may not be the greatest debater or greatest strategic thinker, but if you can think long-term and show a team that you're thinking long-term, you usually get the keys to the building.
Will you say that again, those three Bs? Because that was awesome, and I know that was fast. So I want to hear you say it again.
I learned that leaders think bigger than followers do, usually. Yeah. So I see something bigger. They see things before their followers do. So that's, if you're the leader,
they're
you got to see a problem coming ahead or an opportunity coming ahead. And then they see way beyond what followers do. I know what you're seeing is true. I've got an even greater reality that I'm seeing.
Yeah.
So if you'll go with me on this journey, we can take it together.
That's really good.
Yeah, it's huge. Well, during my doctoral work, I remember Dr. Bobby Clinton said something that I'll never, ever, ever forget. He was one of my profs. He said, and you've heard me say this, Andrew, before, so I know you're smiling. The primary difference between a follower and a leader is perspective. Mm. The primary difference between a leader and an effective leader is better perspective. Mm. So it's so much what's happening between the ears. That's really, really where the change takes place. So classic example, I'm thinking way back. I wasn't there, but I'm thinking way back to the Great Depression in America during the 1930s. Franklin D. Roosevelt was elected to 4 terms of office.
Yeah.
Nobody has had that happen before or since.
And nobody probably will again.
And I think they did. I don't agree with all of his policies, but I will say this. The guy was a hope giver.
Yes.
He just dished out hope. Maybe even when he was unsure himself, could we really do this?
Yeah.
People just needed that long-term perspective. We're going to come through. Days are going to get better. And boy, they hung on to that for dear life.
If you're working with a student today, I know one subject that we've talked about on this podcast and books and so many other things is how overwhelmed a lot of students are today. And I think this is a one big reason why a lot of them don't have that long-term perspective is because they're so overwhelmed with all the things happening today that they don't have time to say, what gratifications should I be delaying in order to get that long-term perspective? So one of the things I think we can help our kids do is to give them some margin in their life, opportunity for them to have some space to go, you know what? What is it that's going on in my life about which I need to start delaying some gratification? Think more long-term.
Yeah, yeah.
Plan ahead rather than just doing the thing that makes me feel good in the moment.
No doubt about it.
And if we can help our kids get some margin to think about that, then we help them, we enable them to start delaying some gratification.
You're spot on. The thing I've noticed about myself is when I have long-term perspective, it helps me weather the tough days.
Yeah.
Because I'm seeing something out at a distance. One other classic illustration of this is Mother Teresa, who died in August of 1997. But I tell you what, she worked in the poorest of conditions in Calcutta, India, cleaning people who had leprosy, washing them, feeding them, clothing them. And I'll never forget reading about one particular day where there's some very successful business people touring who might be donors.
Yeah.
But they look down at her cleaning the leprosy off of the leg of one of her poor men there at the House of Charity. And this businessman just went tisk tisk. He said, "I wouldn't do that for $1 million." And she looked up and said, "I wouldn't either." Her motivation was something way beyond the paycheck. I don't even know what kind of paycheck she got, but she had a long-term
probably not
vision.
A great one. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I just love the fact that when you got perspective, you can handle almost anything.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's so well said. All right, we need to keep going.
Yeah,
so let's do number three.
Number three, off the platform charisma.
Mm.
All right. So this is my own growth area. It was my earliest evaluation as a young leader, as a young professional with Dr. John Maxwell was in 1983. I had started with him just 6 months earlier, and I was getting my first evaluation. So I'm sitting down, you know, just wet behind the ears, green as could be, you know, in my early 20s. And John says we need to do a review, so I've got a pad paper. And he quickly rifles off 7 things that he loves about. I still got this piece of paper to this day. I was looking at it the other day. I kept it now for, well, you count the days, 1983. And I'm writing them all down. I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, thank you very much. Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Oh, you shouldn't. Keep going, you know. So I'm writing down 7 things he loves about what I'm doing in my leadership.
Yeah.
In fact, he said, "Tim, hiring you is the smartest decision I ever made." Oh, my gosh, let me write that down. And then he went on to say, "Now, there's a few things you need to work on." I think I said, "Beg your pardon?" Because I had never been told that I need to work on. I believe my mother that I was amazing, you know. And so John listed as one of my 3 items off the platform charisma. And I said, "What does that mean?" Well, I think he made up the term, but here's what he meant. He said, "Tim, when you communicate to the team, when you're on the platform speaking, you are dynamite. You're just so good."
Yeah.
But he said, "I notice when you walk off the platform, the charisma just stops. It's like you want to curl up with a book and be alone." And I said, "Well, I kind of do."
Yeah.
But he said, "What you do off the platform is every bit as important as what you do off the platform.
Yeah.
In fact, it's what gives you credibility. They won't believe the 20 minutes you just had speaking if everything you do is the opposite." So you're nodding. You know what I'm saying. And everybody listening knows what I'm saying. But I didn't know how to do it. So I said, "John, how do I do that?" And in a Maxwellian way, he said, "Watch me." And it's true. John did that so well. He would walk slowly through the crowds. He would meet people ahead of time when he was about to speak to an audience on the road. And I have done that ever since. And yep. I love it now. I just spoke at NASPA, this big collegiate conference, and I remember just shaking hands with at least 24 people before it went on. Am I brilliant? No. Am I dripping with charisma? Not really. But I'm the best version of me when I do that.
Yeah.
So developing. Now, I don't think you have to be dripping with charisma. You don't need to turn into Zig Ziglar or Norman Vincent Peale. You don't have to. But you do need to be that authentically for your personality,
yeah,
for the others. People, especially in today where we value EQ, charisma and warmth is so desired.
Yeah. Well, I like to think that people can get content anywhere, right?
Yeah, that's true.
They can probably watch whatever you're going to say on YouTube somewhere. What they can't get is the relationship in the moment. And that's one thing that I feel like I have learned from you, just like you learned it from John Maxwell, if you're speaking for an hour, you're going to do 2 hours of charisma, right?
Yeah, that's right.
30 minutes before and 30 minutes after, you're going to be spending time with people, building relationships, shaking hands. How'd you get into teaching? What do you think about this? You know, what are you excited about? What's frustrating? You know, just getting to know people because it sets context for what you're about to say.
It does.
I'm a human being up here along with you people. Yeah. You know, I'm not just the guru who has all the wisdom, and all of a sudden it sets context for that conversation. So you're absolutely right.
What I noticed was after that event that I did with NASPA, if I met 24 people, I'm sure there were at least 24 people that wanted to talk afterwards. And I think if I remember correctly, it's probably the ones I met before. They already felt like, I got a bridge.
Yep.
I know this guy.
Yeah.
We just met, but I know this guy, you know? So one of the statements that John made that I've never forgotten, he said, leaders touch a heart before they ask for a hand.
Mm.
That's the best way to say what we're talking about right now.
So good. Yeah. All right, let's do number four.
Number four. This will not surprise any listener here, but let me just say these words, consistency and integrity.
Mm.
So this trait is a quiet and yet very tangible one. People don't always notice when it's present, but they definitely notice when integrity is not present. In our day of constant change and constant turmoil and constant volatility, I think seeing somebody that's just day in and day out, consistent, 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 and their integrity is there. Integrity does not mean you're perfect. Integrity is taken from the root integer. It means one, like wholeness. A math integer is one number. So it means we have oneness to our words and our deeds.
Yep.
I'm one person. I'm not going to say one thing and do another. That's hypocrisy, the opposite of integrity. Yep. So,
and it's a little bit connected to what you just said about off the stage charisma, right?
Part of
what you're saying is, guess what? That person I am on stage, that's not a different person than who I am in real life.
Yeah.
And when you meet people, you let them know that it basically gives your message more authenticity.
That's right, more
because
weight.
They know you're exactly the same person.
Yeah, yeah.
So it I does love give that. Weight. I love that. And this is the one factor I feel like, the one reality, the one life skill you can't fake, right?
Yeah.
You're either the same person or you're not.
Yeah.
And what this does is builds trust.
No doubt. I'm thinking about a book I read years and years and years ago. I'm going to try to remember it now, but this is right hot off the press here. Achilles in Vietnam.
Hmm.
It was about focus groups that were held where studiers interviewed Vietnam vets. So this was back decades ago.
Yeah.
More shortly after the war was ended, 70s and 80s.
Okay.
But bottom line is this. When they found out what caused PTSD for many of those soldiers, it wasn't the bombs and the bullets, which is what we would commonly predict. It must have been the turmoil of
killing somebody or
something.
Yeah,
that's
like
right.
That.
Yeah. It was the lack of character in the leaders that they served under.
Wow.
So my officer said one thing, he didn't do it, didn't follow through, he did another thing, he didn't keep his word, and there's nothing crazier than having bullets fly all around you and you're not even sure you can trust your leader.
Yeah.
Scary.
Yeah.
And all I'm saying now is, remember, there can be Achilles in our organization.
Yeah.
And the Achilles is not that we didn't speak well, it was that we weren't trustworthy with the people that we led.
And it leads to inconsistency with you.
If the young
person says, I'm here for this mission, and then I see the person who's leading it not living up to that standard, then it feels like there's an inauthentic reality.
Yeah, that's
here.
Right. Yeah. So, and it just dilutes the power.
So good. All right, number five.
Number five, clear communication. Clear communication. Andrew, this may be the one that comes easiest for me. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'm brilliant in any of them, but I think I just love
to
communicate.
It's one of the natural talents, I think,
I think so. It's difficult for me to separate good leadership from good communication.
Yeah.
I know that you can be a good communicator and not be a good leader, but you can't be a good leader without being a good communicator.
Yep.
You've got to be able to articulate what it is you're thinking, what it is you're envisioning.
Yep.
And if we're not good at that, it proportionally diminishes the strength that team members have. the greater the vision. We talked about this earlier when we talked about our own team, and you said, I think we're fuzzy on what the vision is.
Yep.
So we need to do that better here. So clarity is perhaps the greatest gift a leader can give their team, and clear communication is the way it happens. And we've got to just be, and by the way, it needs to be creative. Maybe we show something, not just tell something. But I just think we cannot underestimate that. So can I share one quick illustration, and I'll let you volley back real fast. Way back in the 1980s, the president of the United States, which served two terms, was Ronald Reagan. I'm not asking listeners to agree with everything they remember about Ronald Reagan, but I will say this. He was the president that was called the great communicator. Whether you voted for him or not, he was a brilliant communicator. He was able to disarm opposing opinions. He was able to explain things. He was able to cast vision. He went into office in 1980 with three big ideas, and he stuck to those three big ideas. He made some mistakes, for sure, but he stuck those three big ideas all the way through, kept saying them, saying them, saying them, saying them. And what I remember most about Ronald Reagan was his humor. In the midst of a very difficult economic time in the early 80s, he was still laughing, and we all thought, well, if our leader's laughing, we should be able to laugh.
Yeah.
And that disarmed us. I'll never forget, he was debating Walter Mondale in a presidential debate, and Walter Mondale was thinking about, what do I have that I can speak against, you know, in my debate here?
Yeah.
And it was his age. Ronald Reagan started, he was in his 70s, you know, so he was older.
Yep, and people are seeing that on TV.
Yeah, so Walter Mondale very politely but clearly said, I'm wondering if age might be an issue in this, you know, debate and in this presidential term that's coming up. And then it went back to Ronald Reagan at the debate, you know, platform or the podium. And Ronald Reagan just smiled and said, well, I will not let the youthfulness and lack of experience of my opponent be an issue in this election. And he would, you know, just call, everybody laughed in the eyes. And now suddenly it wasn't an issue. Because what he said was, if I can joke about this, certainly I got a handle on it.
Yeah.
Again, it's just being good and quick on your feet and be able to articulate. And if you need to learn to do this, recommend Habitudes for Communicators?
Yeah.
It's 16 ideas on how to be a better communicator.
Yeah, that's a brilliant resource. I would definitely suggest that.
Okay.
One of the things that I feel like I have learned in working in an office and some of those things is, when you're making a decision, and as much time as you spend making that decision, a lot of times you need to spend an almost equal amount of time asking, how are we going to communicate that decision?
No, that's brilliant.
And the big reason for that is exactly this. You can make a decision, but if you don't communicate it correctly, then you might as well have made a bad decision.
Yeah,
that's because exactly it's perceived that way.
I'm glad you said that, because I think the times when we've not gone forward well, it's when I haven't done that. Mm-hmm. I've not put equal amount of time as, how are we going to deliver this news? Or this announcement, or this vision.
Yeah.
I think you're spot on.
Taking time on that is so important. All right, let's do the last one.
Last one, number six, problem solving.
Mm.
Problem solving. One of the first lessons I learned in my 20s under John Maxwell was, the fastest way to gain leadership is solving problems.
Yep.
I'm going to say that again. The fastest way. Let's say you don't have the badge on. Let's say you're not the CEO. The fastest way to earn your leadership is to solve problems. All of a sudden in the room, everybody's going, Andrew, you just solved that problem. Can you solve this one?
Yeah.
So I'm just thinking, we've got to learn how to be great problem solvers. It's like a muscle, I think.
I think it
muscles is. Muscles grow when you work them. So the more you're just out and about solving problems, thinking about solutions. I had my own two children from time to time watch the 6 o'clock news on TV. They did not like it. They were, you know, they were young and they did not want to watch the news.
Yeah.
But I said, watch the news, pick one problem on that 30-minute news broadcast. There's a lot of them. Pick one. And then say, if I had to solve that problem, what would I do?
Mm-hmm.
I think it helped my kids begin to think in terms of solutions, not just whining and griping. Yeah.
To see things from a different perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. So I feel like this is huge. And, of course, I think of Angela Ahrens as an example here.
Mm.
She is now the VP of retail at Apple. But, boy, she got on the map as a leader with Burberry Coats in London.
Yep.
And it's because she solved the problem of a diminishing brand, brought it back to life by consulting with the youngest team members there, not just the oldest. And she came up with some great solutions that just the brand just took off under her leadership.
So cool.
Brilliant example of problem solving, earning leadership.
You earn your way in leadership with competence.
Yeah,
if you prove that you know what you're doing, that you know how to solve a problem, that's the way you earn your spot in the room, and it's also how you earn the respect of people above you.
I think so.
I remember reading about that in the John Maxwell book I read recently on 360 Degree Leader. Mm-hmm. Said if you want to lead the people above you, the way you do it is by you solve problems that are important to them.
Yeah.
And I think that's so brilliant. Huge. That's been very helpful for me in thinking about the context of my own leadership. Solving problems. Problem solving is something that you can start doing at the earliest stages of your leadership.
Yeah.
Even when you're just basically leading yourself, you can still be solving problems. Yeah. So these are so brilliant. I'm actually going to read the six one more time because I think they're very helpful. The first one is positivity. Positivity. The second one, long-term perspective. The third one, off-the-platform charisma. The fourth one, consistency and integrity. The fifth one, clear communication. And lastly, problem solving. Tim, these are so good. If you're sitting here listening to this, these are six things that you can start talking about today. But if you're wondering, how do I actually communicate some of these soft skills, some of these leadership skills, we've got a resource that could be really helpful for you. If you're in the educational world or you're a parent or you're a coach, a really great way to start is with the very first resource Tim ever wrote on Habitudes. It's Habitudes for Self-Leadership. And these are images that are going to help the young people you're working with understand some of these contexts in new and exciting ways, ways that they're going to remember it a little bit better. If you're in a business setting or you're working with internships or interns or somebody like that, we've got a great resource called Habitudes for New Professionals. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that one talks about a lot of this stuff. It's a really resource. So thank you guys so much for listening. You can find both of those resources on our online store. So you go to growingleaders.com, click on store, and you'll find it there. As always, it would be really helpful for us if you would rate this podcast. 5 stars go a long way to tell people about what we're doing here. Connect with us on social media as well. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, at Growing Leaders and at Tim Elmore. We love hearing from you there. And then lastly, if you've got ideas for the podcast or you have people you want us to interview or subjects you want us to talk about, shoot us an email, podcast@growingleaders.com. We love getting those and hearing from you. Tim, thank you so much for the insight and this leadership conversation. I hope it was helpful to you guys, and we'll see you next time.